This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Good evening. This is Rock Cash, your host this week on The People Speak. The People Speak invites audience participation. You can listen in by calling 805-399-1000, entering access code 76960 8, and pound when prompted. If you have a computer or a smartphone, you can go to bbsradio.com, navigate to station 2, click on the listen icon. You can also participate during the show with call-in questions to our guests. Toll-free USA, Canada, 1-888-429-5471. Tonight, our guest is Miko Peled, author of The General's Son. He is an Israeli peace activist fighting for the rights of Palestinians. Miko's father was a general who first fought in the 1948 war and also in the 1967 war, where he's seen a lot of war crimes go on, and he also turned peace activist. Miko, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
You served in the Israeli military yourself, and you've also witnessed a lot of things that really shouldn't be happening. Is that correct?
Regretfully, yes.
After you've been in and out of the military, you tend to regret what everything is really there for. I was in the U.S. Army, and, you know, you start seeing the injustices done to people all over the world and different things, and it kind of turns you off. But anyways, fill in the audience about you, Miko, besides the fact that you're a general's son, and you're also a martial artist, I believe black belt in karate. You're an instructor. Please fill us in on what brought you to doing what you're doing as far as being a peace activist and fighting for the rights of the Palestinian people.
Well, the title of my book, as the title of my book suggests, The General's Son, Journey of an Israeli in Palestine, the first part of my life was being the son of an Israeli general and being raised in a very patriotic Israeli Zionist family. I had a grandfather on my mother's side who signed the Israeli Declaration of Independence and was an early Zionist leader. So that was the background from which I came. And then my father, after the war of 1967, began talking about the rights of Palestinians to self-determination and the rights of Palestinians or Israeli citizens to equal rights within the state of Israel. And he dedicated the rest of his life to that. And so as I was growing up, this shift took place, although in his eyes there was no shift, but there was, you know, the shift took place from being very patriotic Zionist family to becoming very critical of the state of Israel and its policies towards the Palestinians and demanding that Israel act to achieve peace, which has not happened yet, of course, as we know. Now, my own journey didn't start until after my father passed away. He passed away in 1995. And in 1997, my sister's little girl was killed in a suicide attack by Palestinians in Jerusalem. And both she and her husband and her three boys, and consequently I too, back here in the U.S., began a real journey, a real process of traveling into Palestine. And what I discovered was that there was an entire country that I knew nothing about, even though I was born and raised there, and it was called Palestine. And it was everywhere. In other words, it wasn't just the West Bank. And that there was an entire nation who were my next-door neighbors, although I never met them, and these were the Palestinians. And that there was an entire culture, an entire life, an entire civilization that was happening all around me, and I never saw it, and I never knew it existed. And this was Palestinian culture and the whole existence of Arabs in this country that I was born and raised in. So this was the journey, and I have to say the journey continues. But so the book relays, you know, both aspects, and then the more my journey proceeded and progressed, I should say, the more I became convinced, or the more I understood, that the heroism that I thought existed in the Zionist narrative was a lie, and that there is no justification to Zionism, and that the only solution today would be recognizing that, ending the Zionist regime in Palestine and allowing for free democracy to emerge, which will allow Israelis and Palestinians to live as equals in peace and enjoy this beautiful country in which they live.
If there was a one-state solution, what would you prefer it to be under rule of, Israeli, Palestinian, or joint?
Well, let me just kind of say one thing about, I don't completely accept the premise that the one-state solution is an option. The one-state exists. Israel created one state. When Israel occupied the West Bank and started building cities and towns and taking the water from the West Bank, then it created the one state. And it is a state, however, that is binational, although it has exclusive rights for Jewish people. So the one state is not a choice. The one state is a reality. Now, I think that the whole point of a democracy is that it's a democracy. So people vote, and whoever they choose to represent them and governs. So I don't see it as something where either Israelis or Palestinians, one side or the other, rules the other, but as a democracy where they choose together who they feel is fit to govern.
Right. I'm in complete concurrence with you, actually. Can you tell us about some of the atrocities that you have witnessed yourself while being a soldier in Palestine? Or the atrocities that your father experienced that made him turn around and say, wait, we're doing something wrong here. Please fill us in.
Well, to be honest, when I served, that was 82, there's really no, there wasn't any intifada, there wasn't any great anything of that nature like today in terms of atrocities that I witnessed. Well, the things I witnessed were much smaller and more subtle. I talk about it in the book. You know, an example was, you know, we were still young recruits, maybe 6 or 7 months into our training. And I was in a kind of a commando infantry unit, you know, but and here we were taken to Ramallah, given batons and handcuffs. And I remember thinking, why are we given handcuffs? We're not police or anything. What's going on here? And then the order that we got from our lieutenant was we were supposed to walk up and down the streets, and if anybody so much as looked at us, you know, we were to break every bone in their body. And I remember thinking, what a strange thing to do. First of all, everybody's going to look at us because we're a unit of, you know, armed to the teeth, walking up and down a city with civilians. I mean, everybody's going to look at us because it's a strange sight. So are we really supposed to beat everybody up? I mean, and what a weird kind of a thing. And then a year later, in 1982, Israel's invasion of Lebanon took place. And of course, the horrible atrocities that took place in Lebanon are well known. So that was, but I never went to, I never entered Lebanon. I didn't have to go, luckily, and I think had they asked me to go, I probably would have refused by that point. And so that was my experience. I didn't really see my, you know, anything beyond that. But even that, I think, is horrible enough because it sets the stage to allowing soldiers and, in fact, demanding of soldiers to commit atrocities. And to, you know, where there's absolutely no need, you know, I mean, not that there's any need ever for atrocities, but it sets the stage permitting them to do these things. In terms of my father's experience, you know, he served a 25-30 year in the military. He served in 1948, which I think was really an extended act of terrorism that lasted 12 months. It was really a terrorist attack against the civilian population. But he never talked about that. But as I was working on the book, in fact, as I was finalizing the book, I came across a gentleman by the name of Abu Ali Shaheen, who was a very well-known Fatah leader and served and spent many, many years in Israeli jails. And he told me that after 1967, an Israeli army unit came into his neighborhood in Rafah in the Gaza Strip and committed a terrible massacre. And I'd never heard of that either, but he said that my father had heard about it. My father was still in the military and went to investigate and so on, and demanded that that there be an investigation. And that was and according to Abu Ali, again, I didn't have any confirmation for that, but that was the moment that probably transformed my father and brought him to a point where he demanded that Palestinian rights be respected.
Well, that was actually one of many, many atrocities that are known to have happened, especially in 1948, you know, with Deir Yassin and all the other massacres that occurred, and all the people that were forced out of their homes at gunpoint. Now, you being Jewish, how do you feel about Israel being where it is today and being that way? Is it unbecoming of a Jew to be this way? Is it against their religion to kill and murder and lie, cheat, and steal? It seems to be in contrary of everything that is written or the Ten Commandments of Moses. So how can these people still do this to other people and continue to lie about it and push the Zionist movement forward?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that Jews are any different than any other people. I think this is unbecoming of any person, period. I think the atrocities committed against Palestinians are unbecoming, regardless if they're committed by Jews or others. I don't think that Israel is uniquely Jewish in any way, other than the fact that they give exclusive rights to Jewish people. I mean, most Jews live outside of Israel, and of course, half the population that Israel governs are not Jewish; they're Palestinians. But I think it's unbecoming. Period. I know that many Jews have always seen Zionists as not representing them, to say the least, and certainly representing an aspect of humanity that has to be condemned. And historically, Jews did not accept Zionism. Today, most Jews have obviously not accepted Zionism because they don't live in Israel. And there are many Jewish communities, even here in the United States, and many Jewish organizations who are actively opposed, either completely or in part, to Israel and its policies. So, I don't think that Jews are any different than others. They commit atrocities just like others commit atrocities, and whoever commits atrocities, I think, needs to be called on it, and justice has to be done, and they have to be called on it.
My mother used to tell me stories, and till this day, of the nice Jewish neighbors that, they lived along with, because she lived, my grandfather lived in Jaffa for some time doing some building and stuff like that prior to 1948. And my mother was always, we were like brothers and sisters, and we watch each other's children. Even though a lot of the Mizrahi and the Ashkenazi are really have... how do I put this without being in any way or shape or form offensive to you, being of the European background and not of the origins of the original Jews of the Holy Land. But still, they were accepted by the Palestinians and treated in a nice manner. But as far as a lot of Israelis would like people to know is that the Palestinians are always out to kill them. What's your take on that?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things that Israel did is to create the impression that there has always been this Jewish-Arab conflict, that the Jews and Arabs never lived in peace, the Jews and Arabs could never live in peace because the Arabs hate the Jews for reasons that are beyond understanding, and that this is just, you know, it's our destiny and there's nothing that can be done. But of course, we know that that's not true, because we know that Jews and Palestinians, well, Jews and Arabs lived well in Palestine together. We know that they lived well together as neighbors in the rest of the Middle East, in other Arab countries. And in fact, most Jewish people did not want to leave the Arab countries where they resided for many, many centuries. And it was only because Israel created this rift that they ended up leaving. And that's a whole other story. And of course, when the Jews from Arab countries did come, it was a problem for Israel because they were Arabs. And so the first thing they did was try to cleanse them of their own identity as Arabs. And they called them Mizrahi, which means Oriental, or Sephardi, which is though they all came from Spain. And they're neither Oriental nor Spanish. They're Arabs. But of course, being an Arab according to Zionist thinking, is a bad thing. So you couldn't be an Arab Jew. So they destroyed their identity. They discriminated against them terribly, and they tried to convince them that they need to look and sound more like me because I am a European Jew. And so this is one of these absurdities that the Zionists' hatred towards Arabs and their desire to ethnically cleanse Palestine, or cleanse Palestine of its Arabness, even goes to the Jews themselves, who are Arab Jews. You know, they went as far as trying to cleanse them of their Arab identity. And in many ways, I think they failed, because today the majority of Israelis are the children, grandchildren of Jews who came from Arab countries. And to this day, they, with pride, will tell you, you know, I am Yemenite, and I am Syrian, or I am Moroccan, or I am Iraqi. Even the younger generation who were born, second, third generation, who were already born in Israel, will say this. And you know that, and everybody knows, they listen to Arabic music, and their Arab culture is their culture. And this is the majority of Israelis. You know?
It seems like the majority of the Jews that tend to be Zionist are ones that really don't know what the real thing that's going on there in Israel, and they think that, you know, the Palestinians are the ones that are always attacking, and the Palestinians are the ones that are always are the ones that are wrong, and the land belongs to the Jews. And the fact of the matter is, a lot of, you know this as well as I do, that a lot of the Palestinian Muslims and Christians were of the Jewish population at one time before the conversion to the other religion, and the real indigenous people of the land. With that being said, I don't see where these people that know that they come from Europe, and they know that they know their own history to begin with, why are they in so much denial? Is it the conditioning and the schooling of the Zionist Jewish students here in the United States, or in Israel, pretty much brainwashing them into thinking in that sense?
You know, it's a bit of both. I mean, it's a little bit of everything. The Zionism is a racist, colonialist ideology. There's no other way to look at it. And I remember hearing other people say this before I came to this realization. I was shocked. You know, how do they dare talk like this about Zionism? But this is the reality. And as a racist, colonialist ideology, they have adopted a very specific education system that educates young Israelis to see a very racist and a very colonialist point of view. And part of that point of view is that, you know, we came here because we have to, because it's our only country, because all the other nations in the world hate us and want to kill us. We had to, of course, you know, force some of the Arabs out, but, you know, that was our right because this is our land. Therefore, the Arabs always hate us because this is just who they are and it's irrational and there's nothing we can do about it. And therefore, we always have to be armed. We have to be vigilant. And we will probably have to live by the sword forever, particularly when we talk about the Palestinians, but all the Arabs, other Arabs too, because basically you can't trust Arabs. This is one of the foundations of Zionist thinking, and it's one of the foundations of Israeli thinking. Now, my sister, who's an educator, Nurit, asked the question, how is it that Israelis who seemingly grow up in a, in what seems to be a liberal democratic society, are capable of one day putting on a uniform and committing such terrible atrocities against another people? And being that she's an educator, she decided that she would take a look at what the children are learning in school, and she analyzed Israeli school books and basically the Israeli education system. So she took some time off, and she published a book about the same time that my book was published, and her book is called Palestine and Israeli School Books. It's in English. And it describes how racist, how systemically racist the Israeli education system is, and the Israeli textbooks actually are, even though much of it is very subtle. And just to give you an example, Palestinians are shown in one of three ways in Israeli school books. Either as a threat because they're terrorists, or as a problem, like a an environmental problem, poverty, filth, that sort of thing, or is non-existent. There is not a single image, not a single description, not a single story of a Palestinian as a human being, as a teacher, as a doctor, as a businessman, as anything in Israeli school books. The only thing they see are either faces of angry, you know, youth throwing rocks, or that very old kind of colonialist caricature of Ali Baba with the funny shoes and the camel. And this is, of course, by design, and the way maps are described, and, you know, you see the map of the entire country, but there's no mention of Palestinian cities, Palestinian neighborhoods, Palestinian education institutions, nothing at all, or Palestinian people. And this is how they're brought up, and this follows the same guidelines and the same model, if you will, of other racist colonialist regimes and systems. And that's the reality, and this is why what we see today is the way it is. And part of that has to do with the fact that, you know, or not the fact, but with the claim that this is ours, we deserve it, and that's the end of the story, and everybody else has got to go.
Yeah, it's a take-it-or-leave-it ideology that really isn't going to work, especially with the amount of ratio of people between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And subsequently, you know, everything tends to come to an end. Ferocious regime always comes to an end. And I'm sure that the Israelis are fearing this by now, because there seems to be a big movement of Israeli peace activists out there that are writing books. For instance, you, your sister, Shlomo Sands.
Yeah.
Shlomo Sands said he had to wait till he graduated before he could open up his mouth and speak out about his findings. So I guess it's very difficult in Israel. And then it seems like they turn on you after you write a book expressing the truth about what's really going on.
Yeah, although I have to say I haven't experienced that. I mean, I get an occasional email that's kind of silly or nasty, but I really haven't experienced that kind of, you know, nastiness and pushback. But yes, I mean, you know, more and more Israelis are, and again, not enough, certainly by no means enough, but more and more Israelis are realizing, are taking the trouble to study this, are in an impassioned way, in a way that is more rational and examining and realizing that this is a terrible regime, and we need to do everything we can to get rid of it, and we need to come to terms with the history, and we need to finally free everybody of this nonsense and move forward so that Israelis and Palestinians can live together. Of course, Palestinians are the natives of the land. It's their country. We Israelis are the children and grandchildren of colonizers and settlers, but, you know, we're there now. And while Palestinians will never accept Israelis as masters and colonizers and occupiers, I think they will accept them as equals. And like you said, there is going to be a Palestinian majority, and it's going to be there very soon, in the next 5 to 7 years. People talk about it as though it's some kind of a threat. I don't know why they would say that. I don't see what could possibly be bad about that. Palestinians like to have more children than Israelis, and, you know, that's how it is. And I think we can move on quite simply. I think this issue, this conflict, compared to others that are, you know, that people talk about as insolvable, is actually probably one of the easiest ones to resolve, because it's just a question of a regime of a transformation from this non-democratic racist regime to a democracy. And this is something that we've seen happen, you know, in the last few decades, you know, several times.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you know, nobody wants to accept somebody that's going to beat up on them, push on them, and disrespect them and humiliate them. But people always accept friends, no matter what religion or creed they're from. Sure. And this is found true in history prior to 1948. But we'll get back on this topic and more when we come back with our guest Miko Peled and our awesome sound engineer Don Newsom on the BBS Radio Network. We'll be right back after this short break.
With over 150 million registered users, PalTalk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 PalTalk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining PalTalk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
Got questions? The library's got answers. And books and magazines and CDs and videos and web access and databases and all sorts of other resources at your library. In a world that's information rich, libraries are information smart. Find the right answer and a whole lot more at your library.
In America, most of us have the basics we need to survive, but there are millions of children all over the world who don't. Children who must work instead of going to school. Children who were forced to fight as child soldiers. Children who can't have an ordinary childhood because they lack health care, clean water, or good nutrition. For these children, there is UNICEF. UNICEF works in 157 countries and territories, providing children with what they need to survive and grow. To learn more, visit unicefusa.org or call 1-800-4-UNICEF.
Hello, this is Wesley Snipes. When I'm divinely inspired and spiritually motivated, I listen to BBSRadio.com.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
This land is your land.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you.
Welcome back. This is Rock Cash. Back with our guest, Mico Paled, here on the BBS Radio Network and the People Speak Radio. Welcome back, Mico.
Thank you.
Mico, can you fill us in on your groups out here in the United States that are fighting for the peace and what they're actually currently doing to try to bring the peace situation over to the Middle East?
Yes, you know, one of the big misunderstandings, I think, that exists here in this country is that there's an impression, people think that, first of all, that there's such a thing as a Jewish community. And there isn't a Jewish community. There are many communities who are Jewish. And also that this Jewish community, this fictional Jewish community, is behind Israel, and it's a Zionist community, and they all support Israel. And the reality couldn't be farther from the truth. I've traveled up and down the last 2 years of this, you know, here in the U.S. and in Canada, and almost every pro-Palestinian organization that I that invites me to speak or that organizes an event. And almost every peace and justice organization that invites me to speak and holds an event here in the U.S. and in Canada has a large number of Jewish members. So this could be Students for Justice in Palestine, which is a campus group on university campuses. Many, many Jewish students participate and support them and work with them. So it's not only Palestinians. And again, all the other peace and justice groups and so forth. And probably the one that stands out is JVP, Jewish Voice for Peace, which is the most progressive one and the one that is the most critical of Israel. But there have always been Jews who are critical of Israel and traditionally Zion, you know, Jews opposed Zionism originally. More and more Jews kind of thawed and maybe can stomach some of it, but the reality is that most Jews haven't subscribed to Zionism and don't live in Israel. So that's been really good to see, and it's been really encouraging to see because the reason I think there's any it's of any importance, I don't think Jews have any claim to Palestine or some Jews claim they do, but I think it's nonsense. I mean, it's based on myth. Most Jews obviously are quite happy to live in other countries, but I think it's important because what happens is many non-Jewish people find that they're afraid to criticize Israel because it might offend their Jewish friends or because they might be called anti-Semitic. And I always make a point of making it absolutely clear to when I speak that it's, first of all, it's probably not going to offend their friends because most Jews don't really care that much about Israel. I mean, most Jews don't know that much. They don't care that much any more than anybody else does. The ones that do care, you know, are split. Some support Israel, some oppose Israel, and some reject Israel, you know. And so I think that's an important component of some, and I think it's something important that people need to come to terms with because there's nothing, criticizing Israel is not offensive to Jews. There's nothing offensive about it to Jews, you know, because Jews have always criticized and have always opposed Israel. But it's been really good to see just how many Jews in America and how many communities are not Zionist and are not in line with Israel.
You know, growing up, I was raised in Long Island, New York, and I had a best friend, but his name was Andy Woolrich. Well, he's still a good friend, but his name was Andy Woolrich, and his father was friends with my eldest brother, who was 19 years older, and they used to play poker together while me and my friend played soccer and everything else, and we didn't even know that my brother and his father were friends. We never had problems growing up. We didn't have any problems getting along. I mean, there besides the normal teasing, there was the teasing of the Hebrew Academy and the teasing of the Arabs, you know, the camels and all of that stuff. But there was never really any issues between the Palestinians and the Jews in general. I remember my dad taking me from Ramallah to Israel while he went to Jerusalem, actually, at the time. And this was right after the 67 war. And he left me with a Jewish baker, and the Jewish baker gave me donuts and stuff like that while I was crying. I was only like 5 or 6 years old and didn't know where I was. But that was like my first time ever in Jerusalem outside of Ramallah. But the thing is, we're all people, and why we can't live together has always been my understand. It was something that I could never really understand, as far as why do they have to hurt people? Why do they have to impose martial law on people? I mean, I was chased by Israeli troops at the age of 5. Or 1967, I was 5 when they came in. I was chased by Israeli soldiers into my backyard because I was trying to leave my neighbor's house to go to my house at night. And it was only across the street. And I still got chased by the soldiers. Luckily, my dogs tackled the 2 soldiers down. What I couldn't understand is why the disrespect, why the hatred, why the beatings, why the arm breaking and everything else. It didn't make sense to me that they needed to do this if somebody looked at them in the wrong way.
Well, again, it doesn't make sense it doesn't make sense. You're right. It absolutely makes no sense if you're looking at it as somebody who thinks we should all get along and live as normal people do. It does make sense if you look at it from a violent, brutal point of view of an occupier who wants to finish the job of ethnic cleansing and to terrorize the population. You know, when they took the West Bank in 1967, the generals who were in charge, which was my father's generation, they were all young officers in 1948. They were the young commanders of 1948. And they felt very strongly that it was a mistake that the Israeli government decided not to take the West Bank. You know, they struck a deal with then King Abdullah in Jordan. And they felt very bad about that. And there were several battles like places like Latrun and a few other places where Palestinians fought very, very hard and the Israelis just had to back off. In 1967, when they took the West Bank, they congratulated themselves on what they called finishing the job. And when they destroyed Amwas and Yalo and some of these other towns, ancient towns, they did it only out of spite and out of revenge, because they said, and they said this clearly, they said, we are closing the accounts of 1948, and we are now finishing the job of what we had to do in 1948. So in their mind, there was no doubt that this was a permanent thing. And the permanence of it includes terrorizing the Palestinians until they leave, because that's what they did in 1948. They terrorized the Palestinians, and they managed to force many, I don't have to tell you, force them into exile. And they wanted to continue, and they saw this as finishing the job. So this is the mentality. And when this is the mentality, then that's what you get. You get soldiers arresting children and beating up children. And even today, I mean, if you look at what happens in the West Bank, if you take a look at what happened over the last few days during the protest against the Proper Plan, which is really another big step in the ethnic cleansing, you see children being arrested. You see children being terrorized. I have a friend from Nabi Saleh who sat in prison for a year based on a testimony that was taken from a child who was beaten and terrorized by soldiers. I mean, this is the mentality that not only is it horrific, but after World War II was over, we didn't think we would see this anymore. You know, when the Nazis fell, we didn't think, and the fascism fell, we didn't think we would see this sort of thing anymore, and here it is. So it's a question of getting rid of the regime. It's getting rid of the regime that has this very brutal, cruel mentality. And I have to say that I'm very optimistic because I think this regime is on its way out. I think that the pro-Palestinian cause is getting more and more support, and I think we're going to see what we saw at the end of South Africa, at the end of apartheid in South Africa, and I think we're going to see it relatively soon. In fact, I just published an article saying that.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome. I get into chat rooms sometimes, and I take on some of the Zionist speakers. They like to bring on this thing that's saying, oh, well, Palestine never existed. Well, Palestine never existed as a country. Well, Palestine never existed as this, never existed as that. Palestine is Transjordan. All the typical propaganda BS that they want other people to hear so they can still sway their Zionist ways. And what do you have to say to people that are like that?
Well, I point them to Thomas Jefferson's house in Monticello. Monticello, yeah. Is it Monticello? Yeah, it's Monticello.
Monticello. Yeah.
Because when you walk into his father was a map was a cartographer, made maps, and when you walk into the house, the foyer, there's a huge map of Africa that his father had drawn. And when I went in, I took a look because I wanted to see what he wrote on that extended part of the eastern coast of the Mediterranean, and it says Palestine. That's good enough for me. My father's first passport and ID and birth certificate, as well as my mother's, where it says the country of birth and citizenship, it says Palestine and Palestinian. That's good enough for me. They can argue that there was no Palestine, but it only demonstrates that they're ignorant. I mean, I don't think there's no point there that they can possibly make.
Yeah, it's beyond ignorance.
Not to mention the fact that there are about 10 or 12 million people around the world who call themselves Palestinians and who came from that place. It just demonstrates that they're ignorant. I remember in the 1970s, Golda Meir said this, that she'd never heard of Palestinians, and she was prime minister then. And I mentioned this in my book. My father wrote an op-ed piece immediately after she said this. And he said, is it really possible that in all the years that she's worked as ambassador and foreign minister, that she had never heard people refer to the Arabs of Palestine as Palestinians? I mean, could she be that ignorant?
I don't think it had anything to do with ignorance. I think it had a lot to do with just her being an evil person and just trying to wipe out.
Yeah, absolutely, yes.
Wipe out the Palestinians. I've got a few guests that have forwarded some questions to me, some of the audience members. Laura in Ohio wants to know if you know of Shemitism, the Israeli students who refuse to serve in the IDF, and there are many young people in Israel who realize that Shemitism is their government is a racist government or a racist regime. Well, you've already explained that they are.
Yeah, it's called the Shministim. Shministim is like the senior year in high school. And yes, of course I know them. I think these are the heroes. These are the heroes. I mean, these guys. It's very easy to get out of the draft in Israel today. Only about half the people actually go in. And if you say that you have a backache or a knee ache or asthma or you need your mommy or something, they let you out because they don't want people. They have too many people. The only thing that is not inexcusable is if you say that you're a conscientious objector. And these young men and women know that they could get out of the service saying anything, other things, and it would be very easy for them. Yet they insist They insist on saying that they are conscientious objectors. They insist on saying that they refuse to serve because it's an immoral army. And they sit in jail, you know. And to me, that's courage. And the judges quite often insist that they be placed with hardened criminals in order to punish them. And so, yes, I'm well aware of these. In fact, well, there's one there's a Facebook page talking about him. He's probably going to go to jail very soon. But you hear about them all the time, and I think they're wonderful young men and women. And I support them fully, of course.
Yes, there's also quite a few officers and Air Force pilots that just don't want to do it anymore. And, you know, they're pointing out there that they're complete and absolute war crimes.
Absolutely.
And now, what do you think of Bibi Netanyahu? Your personal opinion on him?
Well, besides the fact that I think he should be taken to the Hague and tried for war crimes and crimes against humanity, I think he is as low life as you could possibly get. I mean, he is he's a shrewd politician, of course. He knows how to play the game and he knows how to come out on top. But I think he's going to go down just like Botha and, you know, some of these others in South Africa and other racist regimes who in the end ended up leaving in shame, and their legacy was a shameful legacy. I think I knew him personally growing up. He was a good friend of my sister. They went to school together, and he was at our house a lot when we were all young and so on. And I think what he probably doesn't realize is that his legacy is going to be one of the darkest and most shameful period in the history of the Jewish people. Even though I don't think Zionism represents Judaism, but they call themselves Jews, and people look upon them as representing Jews. And I think that is the reality. And I think this is true for all the people who support Zionism and to all Zionists. I mean, they're going to either deny that they supported Zionism, or they're going to live in terrible shame that they conducted themselves in such a way. And people like Netanyahu and Olmert and all these others who are in power, hopefully will go to trial. But even if they don't, their legacy is one that is so shameful that they will never be able to rid themselves of this stain.
Yeah, and that's a very, very dark stain, I might add. Yeah. I don't know where this question is going. I've got Zbigniew in Texas. He's saying 9/11. Commissioner Hamilton asked the FBI agent James Fitzgerald why the 911 hijackers did what they did. He said it was due to their outrage at the U.S. total support of Israel and the oppressive regime in the region. Why do you think that testimony was left out of the final report? 9/11 report.
I don't know. I can't speak to that.
Yeah, I didn't know where that question came from. Also, I just I don't think our guest is informed on 9/11, nor is he willing to get involved with the questions on 9/11. Miko, you were saying the Zionists really have nothing to do with Judaism. They are not Jews, or what is it that they are initially? That's been a big uproar in especially to us, the Palestinian people of the land. We know them as Shab al-Khazar. We don't know them as the people of our blood. We accept the Arab Jews have lived amongst us the entire time, and we've always lived in peace. where does Zionism come into play with Judaism, or is it just because some people converted to Judaism that they feel that it's a Zionistic movement?
Well, the Zionists, first of all, the leaders and creators of the Zionist ideology and the Zionist movement were secular people. They were not religious people. And they went as far as they possibly could from Orthodox Judaism. You know, they all came from Orthodox families, but they left them. And they created this, their claim was that being Jewish is not a religion, that being Jewish means you're part of the Jewish people. They created this idea that Jews are a people, are a nation. And they are a nation, and they are the descendants of the ancient Hebrews, who, of course, used to live in that part of the world some 2,000-3,000 years ago. And therefore, they have the right to return after 3,000 years or something like that. But they were not religious people. Their ideology was not a religious one. It was a secular political one. They weren't the first colonizers, white colonizers, that used the Old Testament to justify colonizing other countries. But they said that the Old Testament is not a religious document, but it's our history book as a nation. And this is what they came up when they approached, you know, the powers that be in Britain and in America and so on. And because these were all colonizers too, I mean, the powers that be were all colonizers, and they used the same trick. They used the Old Testament to justify colonizing Africa and all kinds, and America and all kinds of other places. To them, this seemed like they could do business with these people. They were white, they were educated, they wore suits, they didn't look like Jews, you know, they looked like modern people. And this was very appealing to the powers that be, and this is exactly what happened. They created this bond between the Zionists, but there was nothing religious about it. Quite the opposite. They claimed that Judaism is not a religion; it is a nation, and that we are all people. And again, we are the descendants of the ancient Hebrews. So this was their claim. Now, one of the things that is often said, which I find very troubling. Two things, actually, that, you know, people connect this issue to the Holocaust, and they'll say things like, well, how could people who have suffered so much do the same thing to somebody else, particularly in regards to the Holocaust? And the thing is, these are not the same people, because the vast majority of Holocaust survivors didn't go to Israel, didn't go to Palestine. Out of 2 million or so refugees after World War II, Jewish refugees, less than 200,000 immigrated to Palestine. The vast majority stayed in Europe or came to America. So these are not the same people. The Zionists are not not Holocaust survivors. In fact, when Holocaust survivors did come, they were treated very poorly by the Zionists, and many of them left. And the other side of that claim is that people say, well, because of the Holocaust, Jews must have a state. And of course, Palestine is their ancient homeland, so there you have it. It has to be this way. And this isn't true, too, because the very victims of the Holocaust, the very survivors of the Holocaust, said the opposite. If they thought they needed a Jewish state, they would have immigrated to the Jewish state that wanted them. They didn't. They preferred to stay in Europe and reclaim their identity as Germans or Poles or English or French or whatever the case may be, or come to America, which didn't really want them, rather than go and create a Jewish state. They didn't think that you needed a Jewish state, and most Jewish people are quite happy living in other places. And so this disproves this whole claim that somehow the Holocaust either justifies Israel, or that, you know, Holocaust survivors are complicit in the crimes of Zionism. And both of these things are not true. And the fact is that most Holocaust survivors didn't go there.
Wow. That's amazing. I've got a caller on the line. I believe Ash is on the line. Don, are you there? Can you patch Ash in, please?
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hello, can you hear me? I would like to speak to Mr. Pellet. My name is Shiriko from Paltok. I'm an Israeli Jewish, and I'm a human rights activist. My question to Mr. Pellet is like this. My Bible tells me that God is the first Zionist. He brought us to Israel. And then in the Quran it says we are B'nai Israel. We are not B'nai Germany. We are not B'nai anything else but Israel. I'd like him to explain to me why he presents a view that is one-sided and not both-sided. Because you see, I am my ex-wife is Muslim. I got two daughters from her, and they call themselves Jewslams. Okay? So I love Muslims, and I love Jews. But I like balanced view. I like balanced presentation. And he's using this anti-Semite like Carter and all this, that they got this kind of like voice, so to speak, with this apartheid taken from Africa terms, and then kind of like use it on Israel. Well, I'm saying it's like that. The Palestinians have their problem where they never been a country that called Palestine. There is a country called Israel from 1948 that is established and recognized as a sovereign country.
Okay, Asherico, we have, I have two minutes left.
We talked 1967 border. I spoke to Rock Hunter and I told him, we'll go back to 1967 border, give the West Bank to Jordan, and we give back the Gaza to Egypt, and we finish with the Palestinian problem. What do you think like that? Would that be a solution? Because then Rock Hunter jumped and said, no, we don't want that. We don't want Jordan to be the ruler of West Bank. He wants a Palestinian country. So when we come into an agreement that we're going to go negotiation, it stops where it starts, because they do not want to recognize the sovereignty of Israel and the right of Israel to exist. And there I want to ask him a question. Does he want to recognize now, as a Palestinian, Rock Hunter and Mr. Pellet, the right of Israel to exist side by side, peace, yeah? Whether it's one-state solution or two-state solution, I believe I want to make a United States of the Middle East, which is one-state solution altogether, from the Nile to Euphrates. But that is another subject. Right now we're talking Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Therefore, I'm saying, what does he see in his view? Because Palestinians have their aggression action, where they're throwing rockets on Israel, and my mom lives in Ashkelon. And I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy from both sides.
Well, Asherico, let me answer you, and then we'll give Mr. Pellet a chance to answer you. Mr. Pellet already stated that you're a Maghreb, you're a Moroccan Jew, you're an Arabized Jew. I will let Mr. Pellet explain the rest to you, so you could understand for yourself. Go ahead, Miko.
Yeah, well, boy, he's raised a lot of issues here. First of all, I think I want to address the balance issue. I don't think there is a balance, and therefore I don't think I can be balanced. It's very similar to, say, rape. I mean, are you either oppose it or against it? I don't know that they can be balanced when you talk about something like rape. When you talk exactly. about bombing children in Gaza, I don't think there are two sides. I mean, I'm against it. Anybody want to vote for it? I mean, I don't understand it. And I don't think people who... I don't think people who support dropping bombs on children or depriving Palestinian children of water and medicine get to have a seat at the table. So I refuse to be balanced on this issue. I think this is decidedly an imbalanced situation, and therefore my views are imbalanced and clearly decidedly anti-Israeli. Regarding the Israelites, not Israelites, I don't think any of it matters. I don't think any of it is relevant. I think the only thing that's relevant is that today there exists a racist, colonialist, brutal regime that is immoral and needs to be put to stop and needs to be put to an end. In many ways, I mean, it's not identical to South Africa. According to many South African blacks and leaders, it's far worse than it ever was in apartheid South Africa. But it's not identical, except for the fact that different parts of the population are governed under different sets of laws. There are racist laws that are applied towards Palestinians. Palestinians are deprived of water, not to mention land, not to mention the right to travel and live as normal people do. And that's besides the when the times when they're being shot and killed, and there are thousands of Palestinians who are kept in Israeli jails for decades, even though the vast majority of them have never committed acts of violence. And this regime has to be brought to an end. And so if anybody asks me if this regime, this Zionist regime, has the right to exist, I say absolutely not, any more than any other tyrannical, brutal regime has a right to exist. You know, the people have a right to exist are the people, and people have a right to exist, and they exist, and they have a right to exist in a democracy that includes everyone and provides everyone with the right to drink the same amount of water and to travel and to return to their homes, as Palestinians have a right to do and should be allowed to do, and create this and fix this terrible imbalance by creating a real democracy for Israelis and Palestinians and allowing Palestinians to return and travel and live and work in all parts of Palestine.
This Ashariko's view on things is that he wants Israel to govern the entire Middle East from the Nile to the Euphrates, and it would become one country, the United States of the Middle East. I think he's a little bit on the Looney Tunes side, of course, but...
Well, the recognizing Israel all day long, recognizing, why do we need to recognize Israel? Why should any Palestinian recognize Israel? Israel hasn't even recognized its own borders, for God's sake. I mean, why recognize a brutal regime like that? Why? How could we expect anybody to recognize it? I think it shows moral courage when people do not recognize the state of Israel, that they refuse to recognize the state of Israel.
Miko, I'm sorry, but I need to cut this short. We're we've gone over our time, and it's a pleasure. And I'd like to have you back again anytime it's comfortable with your schedule. Once again, I'd like to thank you, and God bless you. And this is Rakesh once again with the People Speak, and our awesome sound engineer, Don Newsom. Next week, we've got combat veteran Adam Kokesh speaking about his incarceration for speaking up and cocking a gun in the middle of Washington, D.C. Anyways, we'll see you next week. Everyone have a good evening. This is Rakesh, signing out.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the steeple by the relief of us, I saw my people, and they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. This land is your land, this land is my land, from California to the New York Island, Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, yeah, this land is made for you.